Welcome to Dave Ramsey's Entree Leadership Podcast. This is the place to learn what Dave Ramsey and his team teach about leadership in business. On today's show, we will hear a lesson from, well, me, teaching about personality styles, something that I'm extremely passionate about, something that I'm crazy about. I love understanding personality styles because guess what? When you know them, you learn how to win with people. We will also hear a special interview with Tom Rath, who is the author of Strength Finders 2.0. If you've not taken that, man, you got to get that. You got to find out what your strengths are. You have to know. Who am I? My name is Chris Licurdo. I am your host for the Entree Leadership Podcast. And again, I want to thank you for joining us today. Last episode, we talked with one of my favorite people on the planet, Andy Andrews. Incredible interview. And I can tell you this right now, we could have gone for another hour with Andy. I mean, that was just phenomenal. Mefford is shaking his head in the booth there. It was incredible. If you didn't get that, make sure that you go back and get it. That was on integrity and decision making. This week, I'm going to be talking to you about personality styles. This is a lesson I taught during our Entree Leadership Master Series event. What I'm going to be breaking down
whoa,
is...
Whoa.
What?
Dude, you can't talk about yourself.
I can't.
You can't intro yourself speaking.
I can't intro myself.
You need somebody else to do it. Let
is
me
it
jump
like
in.
Some sort of I think broadcast it's a, rule or something?
Yeah, we did a lesson on integrity last week. I felt like it was about, you know, hey,
introing
you can't
introduce myself
is
breaking
yourself.
The integrity. I understand.
This next speaker is so fabulous and phenomenal.
Ah, amen.
I'll do it for you. How about
okay,
that? How about
that sounds
that?
Good.
Chris will break down the different personality styles, how they communicate, and how we each receive information and how different we are. I'll just add that this is one of the best things we do around here. We post everybody's personality style on the door or office or cube that they're in. So when you go to speak with them, you know the kind of personality that they have. And it really helps us communicate. It helps us communicate a lot.
It does. It does. Absolutely.
Well, without further ado, here's Chris Licurdo.
This is absolutely one of my favorite lessons to teach, and it's very simple. How many people in here have ever given somebody direction on something, and you've gotten that deer-in-the-headlights look? And you're like, I know this person is not an idiot. I hired them. I know they're smart. What is wrong with them? The truth is, it's actually not their fault. Here's the bad thing. It's my fault. It's your fault. You see, the thing is that we give information the same way that we receive it. So if you're anything like me, I want sound bites, baby. Do not give it to me in triplicate. Who's like me? Man, do not bog down my time with all kinds of details that I just can't handle. I want it short. I want it sweet. And if I'm giving information the same way that I receive it, then guess what? Those of you that are high detail people, go ahead, raise it high. You hate me. Right? Amen or oh me? Because the problem is I'm going to give information that same way. The reason why I love this lesson so much is as you start to learn that, it changes everything and allows you to win. I love what Brittany said in there because what was your question? It wasn't just, you know, how do I get my team members to understand me? How do I get to understand my team members? The problem is I meet with thousands of business people. And very few people actually ask that question. What I hear all the time is, what's wrong with my team? Why don't they get me? Well, how much are you getting them? So we're going to focus on that today. Understanding personality styles is vital to winning. Lao Tse said, he who knows others is learned. He who knows himself is wise. It is vital to understanding yourself. You see, as I start to understand that I'm doing a bad job setting up my team member for success by not giving them information the way they need to hear it, then I can start winning as I learn that about myself. But the thing is until I do that, none of it matters. And one thing you will always hear me say, how many people have sent team members to one of my events back in Nashville or will probably do that? As you go through there, there's one thing that I will say over and over and over again throughout the whole thing. It is your job to make your team members successful. But in leadership, we get confused with that. We get to thinking, I hire that person and it's their job to be successful. Which it should be technically, right? I mean, that's the way we want it to be. But the problem is that we know a lot more about what we're doing than they do. And so, like Benjamin Zander said in that video, it is your job to awaken possibilities in people. Same thing with understanding them. Until you understand their personality styles, until you understand how they communicate, how they process, how they receive information, how they give it, you're just struggling. But you've got to start with the most important person in this, and that is you. You've got to understand how you tick, how you process. It is vital to understanding your team. It is also vital to understanding your customer. How many people in here have a sales team or salespeople? Okay. Now, a lot of you who did not raise your hand have salespeople. You just don't realize it yet. You will as we go through this. Let me ask you a question. If your salespeople could understand the personality style of the person they were talking to in the first 30 seconds on the phone call, would that change the sale?
Yes.
8 people think so? Would it change the sale?
Yes.
So does this become one of the most important lessons for your sales team?
Yes.
Oh my gosh, yes. Do you think Daniel and Tammy and Carter figured you out pretty rapidly? Yeah. Absolutely. On top of that, something that's extremely important, how many people in here did not talk to one of them, but you had an assistant or somebody else call for you? About 10, 12 people. Guess how many sales get lost because of that right there? A lot. Because the personality style that's calling is not the same personality style as the person that's going to attend. And so if you attack that phone call as the person who should be attending in your mind, and you do not pay attention to the person who's actually calling and gathering information, you will upset that person. If I send a high detail person to get me information and you don't give them enough information, my personal assistant, she would have come back to me and she would have said, listen, I think the course is great, but they just don't really give out any information, so I'm not sure you should go to it. Done deal, I'm not going. And I would have missed out on a fantastic opportunity. This is something your team has to understand. The entree leader knows that basic people skills demand that you react and work with the different styles differently. Well, no duh. Now you can see how personality styles is so vital to you winning as a leader, as an owner. And for those of you that aren't leaders or owners, just people, period. My gosh, can you stop right now and think about your team, the personality styles that you have on your team? Can you stop and think about how one person wants to leave the cave without any information, kill something, drag it home? The other person wants to spend about a week trying to get as much information as possible. Can you picture your kids right now? Can you picture your spouse and see what kind of personality
stuff? I just want to throw in, if my wife had gotten my personality profile before we got married, there's a real good chance it wouldn't have happened.
That she might not have married you,
she's
right?
She's like, you know what? This isn't the kind of guy I think I can spend the next 50 years with.
He's pretty much just going to drive me crazy. You guys are a lot alike, though, in your personality style, though, don't you think?
Yes, I think so.
You know what Larry Burkett used to say?
I know.
Two people who are just alike. One of you is not needed.
One of us is not needed.
I know who she's going to vote for. Anyways, moving on. Today, we are talking to Tom Rath. His books have sold more than 4 million copies. 4 million copies and have made more than 250 appearances on the Wall Street Journal bestsellers list. That's kind of impressive. I know that's a lot more than my blog. I know. It's shocking. Tom's first book, How Full Is Your Bucket, was a New York Times bestseller, number one. His 2007 book, Strengths Finder 2.0, was listed as the top-selling business book worldwide by The Economist. Tom's most recent international bestsellers are Strengths-Based Leadership and Well-Being, the 5 Essential Elements. So, folks, this is going to be fantastic. So, welcome to the show, Tom Rath. Tom, thank you so much for being on.
Thanks so much. It's good to be talking to you.
It is. It's exciting for us because this is stuff that we use here. We've used for a long time. We absolutely believe in strength finders and all the stuff that you guys are doing because, well, the truth is, the reason why we love it so much is the reason why you started it. You guys, the why behind Strength Finders, you started it not to help people with their weaknesses.
Yeah, that was one of our earliest learnings, is that, you know, there's so many systems in the world in general that are built around helping us to figure out what's wrong and how to fix that. And of course, there are a lot of times in life when it's real appropriate to fix things that are causing problems. But if you walk into your office every day and year after year your manager's spending 80% of the time telling you what you're doing wrong and maybe 10 or 20% of the time focusing on your victories and where you have more potential for growth and natural talent, things are really out of whack.
I think that's the thing there. And for us, again, we work with thousands of small businesses, thousands of small leaders. As I teach throughout the year and I coach and I counsel, the thing that I find is, and I have to say that I'm at fault here, it is extremely easy for us to find people doing something wrong. It is difficult for us to focus on. It's not difficult to find people doing things right. It's difficult for us to focus on it. And that's what you guys have recognized, is that if you change that up, you change your whole team. You change your whole leadership in the process.
Yeah, and when you mention coaching kids and teams and thinking about development, that's where a lot of the problem starts, and I've seen a few groups working to correct it, but if you look at what happens when a child is in grade school, and we asked this question maybe 10 years ago in 5-10 different countries, from China to Japan and the UK and the US, and we asked people, if your child showed up at home with the following grades, an A, a C, and an F, which grade would get the most time and attention? And I'm sure any of us who are parents can guess exactly where everyone jumped. It was the F that always gets the most attention.
Oh, sure.
And, of course, it's a problem if you're failing a class and you need to spend some time on that. But if you step back for a minute and ask yourself the simple question of where would that student have the most potential for growth and success 20, 30 years down the road when they're well off into their career, it's probably in the areas where they're already exhibiting some natural talent at a young age and getting an A. And so to all but ignore the areas where someone's really doing well is a big mistake at that age, and that translates into the work world as well.
And that, I love that, because I think you guys show like 77% of U.S. parents believe that the lowest score is where the focus needs to be. And
correct.
How can we say otherwise? I mean, that's exactly where I would focus. And the reason why is because, well, that's where my parents focused. And I'm sure that's where, you know, their parents focused. Because we don't think, we haven't been trained. We've been trained to think, focus on the negative. Now, tell me, or not just necessarily the negative, but the weakest area. Tell me, what's the difference between Joe Montana and Rudy Rudiger?
Sure. You know, that's a story we talked about in the StrengthsFinder 2.0 book. But this occurred to me as I was watching the movie Rudy, which I enjoyed and loved the first time, and then the second time I watched it, I was thinking a little more critically. And it's what happens time and time again, where you get a young man who's taught that the greatest thing you can do is to overcome an extreme weakness, and so he spends years and years on end trying to figure out if he could play, just get into the game for one play, when he was playing for Notre Dame, I believe. And sure enough, he gets in for one play, and they give him the ball, and that's the highlight of the whole movie. But we're essentially celebrating the fact that he spent 5 years trying to get a little bit better at something he didn't naturally do well, instead of someone like a Joe Montana or like a Peyton Manning, who has all that natural talent, and then you build around it, and you see what occurs when you invest in talent. That's, if you step back and look at what's the most important reason why you should invest in not only your own talent, but the talent of people who you care about, it's because that's where they have significantly greater room for growth than in the areas where they naturally struggle. So, you know, there's another big myth out there that you can be anything you want to be if you just try hard enough.
Mm-hmm.
And what we've realized the more we research this topic is that it's probably smart to turn that around a little bit and instead tell kids you can be a lot more of who you already are if you try a little bit harder. So it's more about thinking about who you are personally, and no one really disagrees with the value of self-awareness, and then making smart investments in the areas that you can, where you can grow exponentially.
Right, and I think that's the thing that, well, one, I'm a huge Joe Montana fan, which that has absolutely nothing to do with this. But when you look at Rudy, we so love the underdog. We so love that somebody has fought so hard and gone through such crazy trials to be successful for one play. And then that's pretty much it. And the truth is, we're much more excited about Joe Montana winning five Super Bowls, or no, well, he didn't win five Super Bowls, but the, you know, with the Niners winning Super Bowls and being such an incredible quarterback and bringing hope and everything to the followers as they watched him. But we're excited for Rudy for that one play. And right. If I will spend my time focused on me, if I'm going to spend 5 years on something, dadgum, it better be something I'm strong at. But what mm-hmm. I love about what you guys do is you really focus us, obviously you're focusing on the individuals, but weaved through the whole Strength Finders is this, hey, team leaders, wake up. You've got in the book, you share how Gallup surveyed over 10 million people, and only a third of them strongly agree with this statement. At work, I have the opportunity to do what I do best every day. So we have two-thirds of the people that are not. They don't feel that way. And yet we're employing these folks, and like you say, we're looking at their weaknesses and focusing on their weaknesses. So explain a little bit, if you can, on that, about that, you know, people not being able to do what they want to or not being able to do what they're best at every day and what that looks like for a business.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that we've been conducting studies more recently all over the world in 150 different countries where we're asking people about their overall well-being, and that's as broad as you can get about how are things going with your finances, do you feel safe where you live? Are your relationships good? Do you have good physical health? Are you involved in your community? Broad spectrum of things we're looking at to say, if you could measure life in totality, both how you're doing today and looking back over your entire life, what does it look like? And when we look at these measures of well-being and then we compare it to people who are employed in the United States, you mentioned that only a third of people have the chance to do what they do best every day, but the discovery of my research that's been even more challenging or disturbing to me in the last year is where we ask people in the United States who are employed 18 years and over, do you have higher overall well-being because of the organization you work for today? And I would have guessed maybe that would be a third or a half, but it's only 8% strongly agree with that. So fewer than 1 in 10 people in the United States workforce today actually think their life's getting a lot better because of the company they work for today. So there's a definite disconnect. I'd always assumed maybe too idealistically that, you know, you go to work for a company and a part of that is you're assuming that being a part of that overall organization will make your life better, your family's life better because you're pooling your resources and you can get more done. But a lot of people today are walking into jobs where they're not thinking about if their talents fit the role they're about to jump into, and they're not thinking about whether the company will focus on their strengths, work on their well-being, help them to stay engaged for the next three to five years. And so there probably is a lot more that each of us as individuals can do to make sure that we're aligning our talent with what we're expected to do anytime we're walking into a new job.
So let me quickly flip on the other side of this, of those that are doing it, of those that strongly agree with the first poll, of those that are of the higher percentage of your, you know, of those that are doing it, how much more productive are they?
That's where we see that the people, you know, we've been studying this part of it for 30 years. A large piece of Gallup's business today and our background and history as a company is in developing interviews that employers use to make sure that you get the person who has the most talent to sell in a role where they're selling, the person that really knows how to develop people in a management role and so on. And that's where we see that someone who actually has the natural talent to sell, and we'd say has a great fit to that role, can bring in usually between 2 to 3 times as much revenue per year in a role that's real easy to quantify, like a sales role. So it means if you're looking for a job, one thing to keep an eye on is there are two important elements. One is the company looking at your talent to make sure it's the right talent for the job they have open, and a lot of organizations are finally doing that today. The second question to ask is, will you have a manager who can help keep you engaged and develop on your strengths? Because that's why people stay and leave jobs, is the quality of that manager. So you should spend a lot more time getting to know the person who's going to be your boss before you even look at or think about the benefits plan or the pay package.
That's
one of the first things I say to students, and they hadn't even thought about who their boss is.
No way. Because you don't think about that going in. You think about, well, does the company look like a company that can pay me well and do I get good vacation? You guys did a study as well with managers, checking out three different focuses. When they focus on team member strengths, when they focus on team members' weaknesses, and also when they just flat out ignore them, because Lord knows we've seen a ton of those bad leaders that just they don't even know what to do, so they ignore those team members. What were your results when you found out, when you studied those three different types?
Yeah, that was a study that really brought this to life. I mean, we wondered going in if a manager focusing on someone's strengths would help or not. That part's kind of obvious. But the degree to which it mattered surprised me quite a bit personally, and it surprised us so much we've replicated the study four or five times now. But anyhow, what happened is when you look at three different conditions, so let's say we ask someone if their manager primarily focused on their strengths, we ask another question, does your manager primarily focus on your weaknesses, and then we code a third category, which is if the person doesn't say the manager's focusing on strengths or weaknesses, and what it looks like is that means the employee's just being ignored. And if you're ignored by your manager, that's the worst-case scenario. So as any parent could tell you, ignoring a kid is a lot worse than telling them what they're doing wrong or punishing them. So if you're ignored by your manager, 4 in 10 people are actively disengaged in their jobs. And actively disengaged is kind of a kind label.
I was going to say, explain that out, because people need to understand what you're saying.
That's kind of our researcher's euphemism for people who are so negative and angry they're scaring off colleagues and customers and kind of tearing the place down. That's employers need to get people out of that actively disengaged camp as quickly as they can. But if you have managers who are ignoring people, a full 40% of your workforce could be actively disengaged. So the first thing for managers, before you even worry about focusing on strengths, just pay attention. Then once you're paying attention, that takes things down. If you're focusing on people's weaknesses regularly, which is kind of the default, then only 2 in 10 are really actively disengaged in their jobs.
Okay, so
and things get a little bit better.
You're focusing on your team members, but you're doing you're not doing this well. Hey, let's try and make you stronger in this area. 2 in 10 are disengaged.
Yeah, let's call that the typical performance review. 80% of the time on your gaps and 20% on what you're doing well.
Okay.
And then the category that really makes a difference is if your manager's primarily, the wording is kind of key, primarily focusing on your strengths. So let's assume that means that manager's spending a majority of her time focusing on your strengths. In that condition, only 1 in 100 employees are actively disengaged in their jobs. Mm. So the study really made me rethink some of the literature I had read growing up in academic studies, just about how positive people are in their lives in general. Before we did that study, I kind of thought there might be 10% of people in the workplace who are going to be disengaged no matter what you do. Mm-hmm. They just have a little bit lower baseline level of life satisfaction, and there's not. I assume that a portion of it would not be in the manager's control. But what that study suggests is that 99% of the variance may be in the control of a manager if he or she tries hard to focus on people's strengths regularly.
Right. Oh, my gosh. So, folks, those of you that are listening right now, again, I talk so much about the way that we lead is because we learned from our past leaders. And if somebody has not come, and the whole reason why we're doing the Entree Leadership Podcast is because we want to grow leadership. We want to change people in the way that they run their business. But we have to recognize as leaders, even team members, we have to recognize we're doing what we're doing because we learned from somebody else. So getting something like this, and to use a well overused 80s term, paradigm shift, you need that in your brain to go, wait a second, what if I just start focusing on strengths? And for me, one of the things I always, as we're teaching entrepreneurial leadership, I always say it is the leader's job to make the team successful. If you focus on their strengths, then like what you're saying, 99% of your people are going to be well engaged and working hard at their jobs.
Right.
I mean, it's that valuable. So as a leader, I'm ridiculous if I'm not spending time focusing on my team members' strengths. But well, let me ask you this. So I know that I've got to do that now. So a couple things. One, how do I do that? And then two, is it possible to back this all the way up into the hiring process? You know, can I see these things coming at me before I put somebody in a seat?
Yeah, and let me take the reverse order and answer that, because it's probably most important to start with the hiring process, because that's what ensures you get the right person in the right job in the first place. If you don't do that first, then you might be fighting against gravity, which is the person's natural talent, in order to try and retrofit someone for a given role. There's some things you can still do, but the most important thing, if you have any say over what's going on from a hiring standpoint, or you're running a small business or a division of a larger organization, is to make sure you're asking questions, objective questions, in the hiring process that help you to determine if someone has the natural competitive talent to sell, or if they have the talent to develop people as a manager, whatever the given first, to comfort an irate customer in a customer service role.
Do you have some examples of some of those questions?
Sure. Ask someone a question into the customer service role about, have you ever had to deal with an irate customer who wanted to leave a company? And then if they claim that they have, ask them how they did it. Ask for some proof. And then listen very carefully to hear if the person talks about specific examples of how they use their talent to naturally calm the customer down and help them to think about staying with the organization. There are a lot of people, and I'm one of them, who just the thought of doing that takes me out of my zone, and I wouldn't be able to answer that question very well. So it starts to differentiate a little bit there about whether the person has the right talent for the role. And you can't, unfortunately, it's not possible to take a general assessment like the StrengthsFinder you mentioned and to use it in that context, because that's more of a broad assessment of who the person is once they're in a role. What you need to do is build specific questionnaires, interviews, assessments for each position in a company. So if you have 10 key roles, you need 10 different interviews, because those jobs are so different. And someone who, we used to look at this across roles, and someone who's really could be good in a sales role might be have the exact opposite kind of talent profile from the person you want in a role that's teaching or leading sessions, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's important to do that one role at a time and to bring as much objectivity to the process as you can. An academic study I was reading about a year ago suggested that if we just leave hiring decisions to subjectivity and the typical face-to-face interview and did you like him or her or not,
which is what everybody does anyways,
the odds of getting the right person the right job may be no better than flipping a coin. They literally tested that versus chance, and chance came out ahead over time if you average it all out.
Oh, wow.
So it's even if you're not asking great questions about someone's talent, just bring some objectivity to the hiring process. So that's the first part of it. The second piece, with how do you develop someone once you bring them in, then it is about, if you're already in a role, looking at the person and saying, as an individual, what are your dominant talents? And then talking about how can you build more of the things you do on a day-to-day basis around that natural talent. So if you think about this in a real practical way, when I'm working with someone on a performance plan and sitting around kind of plotting goals for a year, it's about how do you take your talent, which is point A, and then your goals or the business objectives, which is point B, and how can you make direct connections there. So if you have natural talent to be very analytical, that's one of the themes on StrengthsFinder that you'd use in this context, what can you do to help this person see how they can use their analytical talent to dig through and mine a set of databases and make some connections about analytics that could help your customer base? Some things like that, drawing some real direct connections between your talents and your major objectives for the year.
I love it. That is fantastic stuff. How can I, as a leader or individual, how can I keep this before me as a constant reminder? I can see, I know, I've watched it as we teach people, and I've done it myself, that, you know, I get something going and it's good, it's helping me, and then I fall back into the same routines.
You know, it's a great point. I'd be the first one to say that if you just go out and take StrengthsFinder and learn about your own talents in isolation, and you don't do anything with it from that point, and it's not a part of a bigger initiative, it's just going to be a fun little motivational burst that'll last about a week, two. We know it doesn't last 3 months or 6 months out if you're not plugging it into a broader conversation or a bigger architecture. So I'm glad you asked that question. One thing that's an easy step and probably more impactful or meaningful for a small business or a team or an organization is to get everyone to go through some assessment that gives you a common language and a common platform, and then to sit around in a room and talk about what your talents are and your passions and the things that you enjoy doing most. It's really interesting. Sometimes you have teams that have been together for a long time, and you get eight people to sit around a table and talk about what they naturally do well and what they love to do, and you end up with people taking on very different assignments that get them a lot more excited about what they're doing. And then the language that you use to describe talent becomes a part of all of your ongoing conversations. You almost have to build that language into your culture, which we've seen occur in a lot of organizations, and then it can have a life of its own that continues.
You create that DNA, so everybody's, it's just a natural occurring thing. All right, I'm going to ask you in this, can I give you my strengths, and you can tell me what you think? This may be suicide, but individualization, achiever, responsibility, context, and restorative.
That seems like a profile that really allows you to go pretty deep on things that you want to learn about and help other people to benefit from as well. It's kind of interesting. I've heard a lot of people describe their strengths and how they apply over the last 10 years, and I'm not sure I've ever seen a profile quite like that. That's what's interesting is that, you know, there are about 30 some million combinations of unique strengths when you go through that whole sequence of 34. So it's a little bit different from an instrument that would type you and say you're this or you're that, you're an introvert, you're an extrovert, whatever it might be. And so it gives you that great detail. And, you know, the individualization that you said, that's your first theme, right?
Mm-hmm.
That may be something that gives you a unique ability to help other people uncover and develop their natural talent over time. It's something that's actually a very rare theme. None of these themes don't have an equal distribution out there, and individualization is one of the more unique and rare ones, that enables you to walk into a group of people or an organization and figure out what each person does a little bit differently and how you can talk to and develop and build each person differently as well. It's the there's another theme that's kind of about harmony and bringing people together based on things that are the same. Mm-hmm. And to a degree, individualization is the opposite, on the opposite end of the continuum, where you're seeing each person as unique and developing them one-on-one instead of thinking about the broad generalities across the team. So, that paired with your achiever and responsibility in particular is probably a pretty good combination to help people think about how they can do what they do best to get things done in particular.
Mm-hmm. The funny thing is I love to teach, I love to help, I love to grow people. That has always been just like one of my greatest things that I have fun with.
I was going to add to that, my wife's a teacher, and you spent all kinds of time teaching in the classroom. It found out it was really her. She was kind of thinking about her passion was working with each student one by one, and then eventually moved into a role where she's doing one-on-one work with kids as a reading specialist. And her top theme is individualization as well, but you can see how she kind of leads her life around developing people one-on-one like that.
Oh, yeah. That's one of the things I love doing. Oh, well, thank you for coming on. Tell us about your latest books that you've got out. You've got Strengths-Based. Why can't I ever say this title? Strengths-Based Leadership. How Full Is Your Bucket, correct?
Yeah, and then the most recent one is called Well-Being, which is an overview of the work we've done in all these countries around the world to figure out what are kind of the five essential elements of life in general. That's probably the broadest book that we've done. It kind of goes beyond the workplace to help people think about what's going on in their own life and how does their work fit into that as one element. So those are the most recent publications. And then the Strengths-Based Leadership book is one I'd recommend for people who really want to see how, you know, there is no prototypical profile of a leader. It's about being more of who you are. And the leaders we studied in there are so different when you look at their profiles of their top five and their strengths.
Good stuff. Well, fantastic. How can people get more of you?
There are a lot more information and content for people to check out on Gallup's website, and the Gallup Management Journal in particular on there has quite a few articles on these topics.
Excellent. Well, Tom, thank you so much for coming out and spending this time with us on the podcast today.
Thanks so much. It was a pleasure.
Tom Rath, everybody. Well, folks, I hope you're hearing how important focusing on people's strengths is. And this was a big lesson for me going through this. And of course, we've been doing this for years here, but still, every time I hear this, I have to bring myself back to the same thing. If I will spend my time focusing on my team members' strengths, if I will spend my time focusing on my family strengths, I mean, think about this. For those of you that are parents, you know, just like Tom shared in that, 77% of us feel like if our child comes home with a bad grade in math, then because we are such a culture that is based on you have to have good grades in every subject, then that's where we're going to focus. Well, what if your child is just not strong in math? Maybe they're not going to be an engineer someday. Maybe they're not going to, maybe they're strong in another area, and that's where we need to focus. If we focus more on the strengths of people, if we focus more on the strengths of our team members, 99% of them are more engaged. When we don't focus on them, 80%, or when we focus on their weaknesses, hey, you're doing this wrong, hey, you need to focus on this, hey, you need to be better at this, or when we just ignore them and don't focus on any strength or weakness, period, 44%. Are completely not engaged into your business. That means you're losing a lot of money. You're losing a lot of productivity. The other thing I loved what he was saying about the interviews, as you're doing this process, as you're interviewing people coming on board, set up specific questions about handling certain situations. Put together specific questionnaires for each position, because just on the salespeople alone, they bring in 2 to 3 times more revenue. If you find out that you've got the right person that has the right strengths for selling, now, I don't know about you, but we understand the concept that you have to actually sell something to have a business. And so every one of you are involved in some sort of business that has sales involved. Would you like 2 to 3 times more revenues? I gotta think so. So hopefully you're getting out of this what I got out of it. Hopefully this was good for you. Once again, focusing on strengths is the most valuable part of your leadership when it comes to your team. You can be like the rest of us. You know, so many of us are so guilty of being able to find people doing things wrong. But instead, if you will find them doing it right, if you will find what they do best, and then dial in on that and pull out their possibilities. Coming up next Tuesday at 9 a.m. Central, we will be hosting another Entree Leadership Live Chat. If you were a part of that, man, we just barely eked it out there for the first one, and it was huge. It blew up. People absolutely loved it. So don't miss that. Come stop by for an hour to kick off your workday and learn from myself and other Entree leaders. And we'll be doing question and answer. What I'll be doing is answering your questions, the ones that you've got, you know, whatever it is, shoot it our way. I'll try to get to as many of those as possible. Obviously, I'm not going to be able to get to all of them, but it's been a great time. We really enjoyed that, and the responses that we got from everybody was huge. Make sure that you go to DaveRamsey.com/EntreeLeadership next Tuesday to join in on the discussion. Once again, folks, how you can be involved with us, follow us on Twitter at Entree Leadership or at Chris Locurto, ChrisLocurto. Go to EntreeLeadership.com. Send us your emails at podcast@EntreeLeadership.com. And for daily leadership, every day, go to ChrisLocurto.com. Once again, I want to thank a great team who makes this happen every single time. Chris Mefford, our producer. Colin Fatkey, our audio engineer. Becky Powell, who's staring at me going, what in the world are you going to come up with today? Our queen of strength. How about that one? There we go. Tom Rath, and of course, Dave Ramsey. Folks, go out there, take this information, change your life, change your leadership, change your business, and join us on the next Entree Leadership Podcast.
Hey, this is Daniel Tardy with Dave Ramsey's Entree Leadership Master Series event. This event offers personal leadership coaching from our executive team, in addition to Dave teaching you his entire business playbook. We're thrilled to announce that our next event will be at the gorgeous Westin La Paloma Resort in Tucson, Arizona, May 6th through the 12th. Our last event sold out early. These events always sell out early because they're limited to 200 people. So if you want to lock in a seat, you better call our team today at 888-227-3223. Just ask for me, Daniel Tardy.
Folks, right now couldn't be a better time in history to operate or start a small business. If you're ready to take your leadership to the next level or start your own company, then join me, Dave Ramsey, for the one-day event based on my New York Times number one bestseller, Entree Leadership. At Entree Leadership One Day, I'll teach you everything you ever wanted to know about building and growing a business. Get your seats now at DaveRamsey.com or call 888-22-PEACE. That's 888-227-3223.
Running a business is not for wimps. If you lead people on a daily basis, you know how tough it is. You want your team to enjoy coming to work every day with the same level of passion you have. How can you do that? We've got three ways. John Acuff, Chris Hogan, and Chris Licurdo. These speakers travel the country inspiring business audiences, both large and small. They're not only endorsed by Dave Ramsey, they're on his team. They live and breathe Entree Leadership. They get it. And they know how to get it across to your people in their own unique styles. They'll share practical, proven, easy-to-understand principles that will impact how your team sees their work, and more importantly, how they see themselves. This is real-life stuff straight from the trenches. Dave's company has won Best Place to Work in Nashville 5 times in a row for a reason. You can win, too, but you have to be intentional about it. Call our speakers group to schedule John Acuff, Chris Hogan, or Chris Licurdo today. Call 888-284-2488. That's 888-284-2488 or online at DaveRamsey.com/speakers.